While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia. You are now listening to On the Reading News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju. Now, at a time when confidence in institutions, economic stability, and public accountability are under closer scrutiny, the need for disciplined thinking and reliable information has never been greater. In moments like this, clarity is not a luxury. It is a necessity. Now, every weekday from 1300 hours to 1430, we move beyond the headlines to explore the deeper forces influencing our national trajectory, from fiscal strategy and the public spending oversight to governance reform and service delivery outcomes. This program is built on one premise, that is, informed citizens make stronger democracies. Across the country, from the decision-making offices of Windhoek to the coast's fishing economy, the crop fields and the cattle posts of the north, and the growing towns of the south, Namibians are engaging in serious reflection. Are our national budgets aligned with our development ambitions? Is policy translating into measurable impact? Are institutions adapting to meet rising public expectations? Well, now today we examine how priorities move from parliamentary debate to practical implementation. We consider how allocations on paper become infrastructures in communities, and we ask whether economic data reflects the lived experiences of households and businesses. Now, On the Reader is not driven by rhetoric. It is guided by evidence, context, and constructive dialogue. Here, policymakers, analysts, industry voices, and engaged citizens share one responsibility, that is to elevate the national conversation through facts and a reasonable debate. Now, as Namibia confronts complex economic decisions and evolving public demands, our commitment remains steady. Thoughtful dialogue strengthens accountability, and accountability strengthens progress. So stay with us as we analyze the issues shaping our development journey with balance, depth, and purpose. Because this right here is On the Reader News Analysis. Let's get right into today's conversation. The Namibia Standards Institution today hosted a public consultation workshop on the revised standards regulation, a key step in strengthening Namibia's regulatory framework and quality infrastructure. The consultation forms part of ongoing efforts to fully implement the Standards Act 18 of 2005, which came into operation in September 2013. Now, over the past decade, Namibia's economic environment has evolved significantly, shaped by population growth, expanded trade, and deeper regional and global integration, including participation in the African Continental Free Trade Area. Now, in response to these challenges, government adopted the revised National Quality Policy, NQP, from 2020 to 2025, aimed at aligning Namibia's national quality infrastructure with international best practices and improving acceptance of Namibian products in export markets. Now, this workshop brought together key stakeholders to review proposed amendments to the standards regulations, and the revisions are intended to strengthen the legal operational framework for the administration of compulsory standards, to clarify processes for the development of locally produced and internationally adopted Namibian standards, to provide mechanisms for the declaration and enforcement of compulsory standards by the minister, to introduce provisions for the expanded development of standards in emergency situations to protect public health, safety, and the environment, as well as the national security, as well as to enhance import inspection and market surveillance programs that are intended to prevent substandard products from entering the Namibian market. Now, the Namibia Standards Institution is facilitating or facilitated the consultation process on behalf of the Minister of Industries or the Ministry of Industry, Mines and Energy, which is empowered to issue regulations under the Act. The revised regulations are said to be aligned to the objectives of the revised national quality policy and the country's broader development agenda that includes strengthening manufacturing, trade and consumer protection. Now, by tightening quality compliance and requirements for both locally manufactured goods and imports, the regulation aims to safeguard consumers while enhancing the competitiveness of Namibian products in regional and global markets. Hence, the NSI has emphasized that stakeholder participation is critical in ensuring that the final regulations are practical, that they are effective and responsive to the needs of the industry, to the regulators as well as the consumers alike. Now, let's take a listen to one of the ladies speaking at the event, giving an educative background on this regulatory frameworks. So let's take a listen to her and we'll be back shortly to get also into it. Stay tuned.
UTOTBT, the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreements, as well as the SADC Technical Regulatory Framework. And lastly, I'll then take you through the examples of the member states that are also implementing technical regulatory framework. At the end of this presentation, next slide, we'd like to ensure that we provide you with a context of international as well as regional regulatory framework. We also want to show alignment across governance levels, provide a context of how compulsory standards and regulation can be implemented, as well as support harmonization and transparency through the process of compulsory standard. Now, next slide. The first point or technical regulatory framework that I would like to present today is on the WTO technical regulatory framework, which the WTO, which Namibia is a member of, on technical barriers or to trade, provides the global rules governing technical regulation standards as well as conformity assessment procedures. It requires members to base regulations on international standards, where appropriate, ensure transparency through notification and avoid unnecessary barriers to trade. And that's why the key important base international standards. It also allows for national compulsory standards. It also allows for us to ensure that national compulsory standards are justifiable, proportionate, as well as non-discriminatory. The framework is designed to ensure compulsory specifications alignment with international obligations. As I indicated, international standards is a guide that WTO provides for us, and as such, member states are then encouraged to make use of international standards through the technical regulatory framework. WTO also guides us on what the good regulatory practices should be, which refers to a formalized mandatory whole of governance process that defines the common and transparent rules by which regulatory agencies develop technical regulations for all regulated sectors following international standards. The good regulatory practice is quality control mechanism for the development of regulations, ensuring on a continuous and systematic basis that government rules are relevant, of the highest quality, cost-effective, internationally aligned, and least economical restrictive amongst alternative of the same purpose. What is of importance there, especially when it comes to transparency, is to us to ensure that through this process, notifications are then and consultations are conducted, as well as notifications to ensure that everybody has an opportunity to provide their comments and also to be aware of what is what regulatory we intend to implement. The next I want to speak on is the African Continental Free Trade Agreement Technical Regulatory Framework, which aims to create a single continental market adopting WTO principles to the African context to boost intra-Africa trade. The AFCTA framework promotes regulatory coherence across African states to support inter-Africa trade by encouraging harmonized standards, cooperation among national quality infrastructure institutions, and recognition of conformity assessments results, as we refer to it, mutual recognition agreements. Compulsory standards should support continental interoperability and reduce technical fragmentation. The African Continental Technical Regulatory Framework is a specialized framework under the Pan-African Quality Infrastructure that ensures that national technical regulations conform to both WTO-TBT as well as the AFCTA requirements. Moving on, I would then like to also speak on the African Continental Technical Regulatory Framework, or the ACTREF, which is a specialized framework under the Pan-African Quality Infrastructure that ensures that national technical regulations conform to both WTO as well as the AFCTA agreements. The AFTREF provides a structured continental approach that aligns national technical regulations and quality infrastructures across Africa to enable mutual recognition as well as facilitate inter-African trade to support the AFCTA implementation. The ACTREF operates as a technical regulatory architecture supporting the AFCTA annexure on technical barriers to trade, and it connects national regulatory authorities with regional economical communities such as the SADC. The AFTREC also allows for us to have the National Technical Regulatory Framework, or the NATREF, which is the national system that governs how technical regulations and compulsory standards are developed, implemented, and enforced within country in compliance with the AFCTA and the WTO obligations. The NATREF is a national implementation architecture that operationalizes the ACTREF within each member state. In regulatory terms, the ACTREF provides the policy as well as the coordination framework, and the NATREF delivers implementation, enforcement, as well as the operational control. Now, moving on to the regional, which is the SADC Technical Regulatory Framework. The SADC framework operationalizes regional cooperation on standards, technical regulations, as well as conformity assessment. Through the TBT cooperation structure and related bodies, member states work towards harmonized regional standards and align regulatory practices. Regional consistency strengthens acceptance of compulsory standards across SADC market, and therefore SADC uses the regional approach to implement technical regulation, acting as a building block for the Africa Free Continental Free Trade Agreement. Now, I also want to give you examples of other member states that are having technical regulatory frameworks already in existence and that are working. The first one is South Africa, which operates a structured regulatory system where compulsory specifications are administered by design regulators, supported by standards, development, and conformity assessment infrastructure. Market surveillance ensures compliance as well as consumer protection. South Africa, through the National Regulatory for Compulsory Specification, then implements their technical regulatory framework through also the support of SABS, which then develops the standards that are referenced in technical regulations, which are then gazetted at national level. Conformity assessments, which include inspection and certification, as well as enforcement, are then used to ensure that there is compliance of those regulated products. Market compliance monitoring, which you also refer to as import inspection, is then also administered. And at the moment, South Africa is looking or is administering at a number of 81 products, which is still to be confirmed, which could actually be more in terms of what they are currently administering. The next member state also implementing technical regulatory framework is Zambia. Zambia has implemented a regulatory framework which integrates standards, development, certification, inspection, as well as enforcement within a national quality infrastructure model of compulsory standards, and it addresses safety, health, as well as environmental protection. Zambia has Zambia compulsory state agencies that then administer compulsory standards as well as enforcement, including inspection as well as certification. Market compliance monitoring also take place. Zambia currently has a total number of 101 administered compulsory standards. And lastly, we have Botswana, who applies the national system for standards development, certification, and compliance monitoring, also supported by enabling legislation, regulatory controls, which ensures products meet mandatory technical requirements. This is done through the Botswana Bureau of Standards, also supported by their Standards Acts, as well as the technical regulations that then supports product compliance, certification and inspection processes, as well as regulatory compliance enforcement. And Botswana is looking at least administering a total number of 128 standards or compulsory standards. Now, in terms of framework alignment, the technical regulation operates as a layered governance system with international rules, established principles, continental as well as regional frameworks to promote harmonization, national authorities implement and enforcement of compulsory standards, which can be then done through institutions such as the NSI. The technical regulatory frameworks for the WTO, the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, and the Southern African Development Community are designed to reduce non-tariff barriers, or the NTBs, harmonize standards, and facilitate smoother trade of goods and services within the continent. Now, at a national context, when we're speaking of all this technical regulatory framework, where will then us as the NSI as well as Namibia be establishing that? This comes from the National Quality Policy, which is the overarching government policy statement that defines the legal as well as administrative regime of the elements of the national quality infrastructure and technical regulatory framework within the country. I must indicate NSI is Namibia's national quality infrastructure, aimed to establish the legal and administrative mandate of institutions involved in the national quality infrastructure, as well as the technical regulatory framework. The national quality policy is available. I think we can all have an opportunity to read through it. The national quality policy allows for the establishment of the technical regulatory framework, which is the legal and institutional basis for the developing, implementing, and enforcing technical regulations, and including links to standards conformity assessments as well as market surveillance. With this, we are looking at establishing of the technical regulatory coordination office that will coordinate all the technical regulations in Namibia. The national arrangements for accreditation, testing, and inspection and certifications that underpin the confidence of products are also then established through the National Standards Body, where then we perform conformity assessments, which are accredited to then confirm competency of the conformity assessments activities that we're carrying out. In addition to that, it also allows for us to develop the National Standardization Strategy, which is a policy direction coordination mechanism for standards development, adoption of international standards, as well as standards participation. I think some of us that are sitting here today were part of that process, where at this moment Namibia has now the National Standardization Strategy, and out of that, yes, the NSI will then develop a National Standardization Plan, which then allows or it then sort of directs us in terms of standards needs that requires our attention for development that can then also input our technical regulatory framework.
Quite interesting. Now, the public consultation taking place today is definitely more than a technical legal exercise, but rather it is a critical step in strengthening Namibia's economic foundation, protecting consumers and positioning the country competitively, that is in regional, both regional and global markets. Now, the strong standards are the first line of defense against unsafe and standard products. Now, by strengthening the regulatory framework under the Standards Act, that is 18 of 2005, Namibia enhances its ability to prevent inferior imports from entering the local market. And this directly protects the public health and, of course, But that is by safely keeping them that in terms of health, that it protects the environment as well, protects the animal and the plant life, as well as national security with effective market surveillance and compulsory standards, ensuring that consumers can trust the quality and the safety of the goods that they do purchase. Now, Namibia's manufacturers and producers cannot compete fairly if the market is flooded or oversaturated with cheap substandard imports. Therefore, the strengthening regulations create a level playing field that is ensuring that all products, whether they are locally or imported, meet the same quality requirements. And this supports then, therefore, industrialization and value addition by placing them on the same par, and as well as job creation. growth under the Grow at Home strategy, as well as increase investor confidence. Then by improving product and system certification and strengthening quality infrastructure, the Namibian Standards Institution, or NSI, therefore enables local businesses to meet international benchmarks and access export markets. And this makes it quite interesting because especially for those who are coming up with their products, for instance, the peanut butter, the Namibian peanut butter. Unfortunately, I don't have the exact name in my head. For instance, them as well, they now would measure themselves against this, regulations, and they wouldn't need to have to be sent back and forth when they already understand the assignment of what is expected of them. Therefore, it makes it, easy to penetrate, not just the regional markets, but the global markets as well with your product because it has met both standards. It's not that you try to do it for the regional market and then try to improve it for the global market. Hence why I say it puts both on par. Namibia is part of an increasingly integrated regional and global economy, including participation in the African Continental Free Trade Area. Now, for Namibian products to be accepted beyond its borders, the country's standards and conformity assessment systems must align with international best practices. Trading partners need confidence that Namibia's regulatory systems are credible, first of all. Secondly, they are transparent and that they are reliable. That's quite also very interesting as, think about now the example I said of peanut butter made right here in Namibia. A lot needs to go in also in trying to understand how is the shelf life of this peanut butter. Can it be transported from here and be consumed in, Nigeria, for instance, considering also how many days will it take for it being en route when it finally reaches that country? Will it still be, will it still be in quality, position of quality where it can still be consumed? Yeah. Therefore, those things now come into play as we are talking about this regulatory framework. Therefore, this now strengthens the standards by facilitating smoother cross-border trade and reducing technical barriers to trade and improves recognition of the Namibian certification, which is given, of course, upon inspection that the product does qualify. It is a quality product, meets those standards that are included in that certification, of which I can't pinpoint exactly what they are. Unlock access, and therefore this helps to unlock access to the larger markets. A well-functioning national quality infrastructure, including metrology, standardization, accreditation, inspection, testing, and certification, is essential for a modern economy. Now, those reforms ensure Namibia has reliable measurement systems, clear and transparent standard development processes, efficient mechanisms for declaring compulsory standards, and emergency procedures to respond quickly to the risks. Now, remember, emergency procedures come in as this is a product that we are producing, and we don't know exactly the reaction or body reaction as much as, you know, those things are tested for. But in case where, for instance, it's a consumable product and it does give some sort of allergy reactions, then there needs to be some sort of mechanism to counteract that. Hence where now the emergency procedures to respond quickly to the risks are necessary. Now, the revised regulations are said to align with Namibia's broader development priorities, including manufacturing, trade, and consumer protection under the national development frameworks. Now, quality infrastructure is not a side issue. It is a strategic economic enabler. Therefore, this process is important because standards are not merely technical documents, of which a lot of documents were released today. of discussions that were spoken, the discussions that we that took place today as NSI held this event, but rather these documents are not just technical documents, but rather they are instruments of economic transformation, for they safeguard citizens, they protect fair competition, and open doors for Namibian products to compete with confidence in regional and global markets. Therefore, by strengthening its regulatory framework today, Namibia is investing in a safer, more competitive, and more prosperous future. And also, one other thing that I do appreciate about consultations is that the public get to air their opinions. You know, something that perhaps those sitting having to draft the regulations, or finally after everything else is done, they might overlook a particular aspect that the consumers or the public themselves may have. Hence why consultation is quite important, because then the public themselves get to air their opinions, their contributions, and of course ask questions as well. And yeah, who knows? Perhaps that which they contribute is would be of significant value and will be incorporated in the regulatory framework. But now let's take a listen to Advocate Deck, who was also speaking at the event. Let's take a listen on that educative presentation as well.
All right. So let me introduce a few key concepts. Of course, the regulations are made under the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy, as the CEO already indicated. The purpose of the regulations really are to operationalize and strengthen implementation of the Standards Act. It sets clear procedures for development of standards. It sets out transparent adoption of international standards. It establishes the framework for compulsory standards. The CEO already spoke to this. And importantly, it allows for regulatory impact assessment. Making of standards are expensive, and implementing them are even more so. So a regulatory impact assessment, or RIA, as it's commonly called, would address key issues pertaining to compulsory standard making. Then, of course, we want to be aligned to the international body, the global village in which we live. So it's important that the regulations also align with WTO, SADC, and AFCFTA requirements, particularly because of Article 144 of the Constitution, because Article 144 really sets out that international agreements are applicable in domestic law. Sometimes you need to operationalize them. Other times they're automatically applicable. Once the regulations become applicable or enforceable, then the 2013 standards regulations will be repealed. Can you go to the next slide, please? One afters. So this slide sets out the legal foundation for the regulations. Of course, you can't make regulations without it being firmly grounded in the law. And the enabling provisions in the Standards Act include Section 34, under which the minister may make regulations. Section 20, where the NSI develops standards, Namibian standards. Section 26, which allows the minister to declare Namibian standards as compulsory by way of regulation. And then Section 30 allows the minister to appoint inspectors and auditors, internal auditors, to ensure compliance with the Act and to allow for certification and assessment activities. Section 25 deals with appeals that may be lodged to the minister against certain decisions, not all, certain decisions of the NSI. As I earlier mentioned, it seeks alignment with the international legal framework within which we operate. Ms. Edukata really eloquently highlighted how this legal framework, which is both regional and international, impacts on the Namibian technical regulatory framework. Of course, there's another entity that's mentioned in the Act, the ISO International Standards Organization and the IEC International Electrotechnical Commission, right? Is that right? IEC, which really sets standards within the international framework. This is a voluntary body. And, of course, many WTO, AFCFTA, SADC, they all implement and incorporate ISO, IEC guides pertaining to technical regulations. Now, the structure of the regulations are set out in the next slide. There are 12 parts. Key ones are the stages of development of Namibian standards, how locally developed Namibian standards are to be done, how Namibian standards are based on international standards, the manner in which compulsory standards are declared, notified, and administered, and then when emergency events may impact standard-making processes so that some standards do not follow a compulsory notification period as required by the WTO. This is important because emergency events like, you already mentioned this about COVID-19, and we anticipate more of these epidemics, right? We see that that the world health sector is not so stable. So it can be that other emergency standards, but not just in health, but also in agriculture, public safety, etc., could become relevant. Our next slide, Regulation 2 describes the guiding principles for the development of standards. Standards must be developed in accordance with transparency. So that's a key requirement of the WTO. Openness, consensus, international alignment, as well as avoidance of unnecessary trade barriers. And that's also a key concept. The WTO agreement is called the WTO-TBT agreement. So it's the prevention of technical barriers to trade agreement, really. And this is within this legal framework that you find standard making taking place. The normative references, in other words, when it comes to interpretation of standards, the courts, God forbid, courts, but those that are applicable, that are affected by the standards, they will have references such as the ISO, IEC guides, the Code of Good Practice, which is an annex to the WTO-TBT agreement, as well as the SADC technical regulation framework and the AFCFTA agreement. NSI may also, this is a key point also, it was not previously in the standards regulations. The NSI may adopt standards from regional standardization bodies as well as national standardization bodies. Often they base their standards on international standards, so it's not necessary to reinvent the wheel, but really to adopt what is already in the marketplace. And next slide, please. Regulation 3 compels the NSI to publish a 6-monthly work program to maintain public register of standards and to notify the WTO, TBT, SADC TBT, as well as the secretaries, as well as the ISO, IEC Information Center of any new standards and also of the work program. In terms of Regulation 4, the NSI is the national focal and inquiry point for all Namibian standards and standardization activities. Next slide, please. Part 3 deals with the 7 stages of development, and this is aligned to the Standards Act. Section 34 requires the minister to set out in the regulations the stages of development of standards. This is also aligned with the National Standardization Plan. And the 7 stages include the following: request stage, proposal, preparatory, committee, inquiry, ratification, and publication. And this is really to enhance transparency, consultation, and technical integrity of the standards. The request stage involves the submission of a written request, identifying the need for a Namibian standard. If the request is approved by the NSI, a Standards Development Committee, or SDC, is established. Thereafter follows the proposal stage. During this stage, research is done on available Namibian and international standards, and there's prepared a new work item, which basically sets the parameters, the terms of reference of the standard, and then circulated for the development of the standard. The preparatory stage is next. which concerns the development of the working draft. So it's the working draft of the standard. The SDC, Standards Development Committee, is primarily responsible for this. This is followed by the committee stage, during which the SDC forms a committee now to consider the working draft of the standard, and then it's finally approved by that committee as well. So it's a particular committee for every subject matter. There may be different SDCs, not just one, and these comprise generally industry experts and members of NSI, etc. The inquiry stage is next. During this stage, the draft standard is published in the Government Gazette, and then it's circulated to relevant experts for technical comments and also to the general public or specific stakeholders for comment. So publication really is for transparency. The ratification stage is the final approval by the CEO of the Namibian standard, and thereafter is ratified by the council, because the council is ultimately responsible for the NSI. The council then ratifies the standard, but this of course will be subject to internal SOPs. Maybe the NSC would delegate some functions relating to ratification to the CEO. The publication stage is the final stage. This is at this stage the standard enters into force after its publication in the Gazette. Bear in mind, though, that generally Namibian standards are voluntary unless the minister declares them compulsory under Section 20, subsection 6 of the Standards Act. Now it comes to locally developed standards. These are what we can call them indigenous standards. They pertain to matters that are peculiar to Namibia and does not necessarily have an impact on the outside world. But they may have in trade. For instance, you would have, you know, a standard on knowledge pertaining to harvesting of plants that people in Namibia know are medicinal. And then there are certain standards that needs to be set, you know, for the selling of these type of medicinal plants, etc. So these are locally developed standards. They are not based or adopted from an international standard. So they follow the same stages as we've set out. Regulation 7 deals with the request stage. This can be initiated by stakeholders, regulators, the NSI, as well as as an existing SDC. After approval, the SDC is then established to develop the standard. Regulation 8 is the proposal stage. The SDC consider the request and relevant documentation and prepare a work program for the development of the standard. They do research into the subject matter. They prepare and circulate the new work item, setting the terms and reference on the contents of the proposed standard. Regulation 9 is the preparatory stage. The working draft of the standard is prepared. Next stage, please. Then the proposal, Regulation 10, if you can go to the next slide. Regulation 10 is then the committee stage. The SDC consider and approve a working draft, must ensure technical accuracy thereof. Regulation 11, inquiry stage. Here's where the 60-day period that the CEO alluded to come in. There must be a 60-day minimum period for comment. It's published in the Gazette, the website of the NSI, as well as a newspaper. And then also international notification must happen to the various stakeholders. Regulation 12 then.
Clearly much goes on in terms of the regulatory framework by the NSC, Namibia Standards Institute, that is NCI. Now, of course, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with more right here on the Breda News Analysis. Now, should you want to partake in the news analysis, 083-288-401 is the number in studio. That is 083-288-401.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa eva tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala kono ngeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitida mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetera oipindi konu konda doinawa nune udo otukwetera o special ngetashia kengeje pa omarudi dayo loka opone ujendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu omafelane Eagle FM the eye
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now in other news, poaching along the Kavango River is escalating at an alarming rate, placing both wildlife and tourism livelihoods at risk. That is according to a local lodge owner. Now, Mark Buxton, who owns a Shambara camp situated between Rundu and Divundu, says illegal hunting activities along the Kavango River have intensified in recent months. Buxton claims that despite submitting multiple reports to the Ministry of Environment, little has been done to curb the situation. He urges that the lack of visible enforcement has allowed poachers to continue operating with minimal interference. Now, the impact on wildlife, particularly on the hippos, has been severe. Paxton says sightings of the animals along the river have declined sharply, a development that is directly affecting tourism at his lodge. Now, visitors frequently travel to the area specifically to view hippos in their natural habitat, but the dwindling numbers are leading to growing disappointment among the guests. He warns that if urgent measures are not taken to address poaching, the long-term consequences could extend beyond wildlife losses, undermining the broader tourism economy that supports community alongside the river. Let's now take a listen to Mark Paxton, who is a Shambara camp owner.
And I'm the owner and manager of Shambara Camp, and have been so since 1999, so we've been here for a long time. This latest poaching situation shows a drastic increase. Every year, I, together with a group, count the hippos as well as the birds and all the other animals along this stretch of about 25 kilometers of the Okavango River. And in this period, where we had these massive poaching incidents, we had a decrease from 189 hippos in July 2024, which is what we officially counted, to 43 hippos in the same month the following year. And that was over this poaching incident. These counts that we do, I send these counts, the birding stuff goes to Wetlands International, and the rest of the stuff, although it is private, is made aware with to MET. MET has been aware of this situation every single time. I try my best to work with authorities in the first place. I report to MET, Ministry of Fisheries, and to the police. So each and every one of these incidences, even if it's a shot that we hear, I report this to the police and MET. 9 times out of 10, MET doesn't respond at all. Police does occasionally, and at best, they would come out here and talk to me about it, but no arrests have ever been made with regard to the poaching. And because of that lack of interest, the community has become very aware that they can get away with absolutely everything. And unfortunately, my business depends entirely, not only my business, but tourism business in the Okavango, in the Kavango region, depends entirely on the presence of wild animals and the presence of fish, birds, hippos, crocodiles, etc. So this kind of mass, uncontrolled poaching affects tourism throughout the Kavango region.
Thank you so much.
Nice.
Now we just need to go quickly to this sergeant.
You have been keeping some statistic of the...
Yes, I'll bring it for you.
Yeah, now. Okay. So from the three that you mentioned, bats, hippo, and crocodile, which ones do you think are most poached?
Everything. These people kill everything. Okay. Absolutely everything.
All right.
They take the bird, these coal mine bee eaters at the colony every year. We've reported that. We try to work with community. We've had community members try and leaders try and work with them out. Doesn't happen.
Now, how does this affect you as a lodge owner?
Well, how do you think?
Can you give me an answer?
My people, we rely on guests coming here to see birds, to see hippos, to see crocodiles, to catch fish. Mm-hmm. That's what they expect when they come to my lodge and every other lodge in the area. Mm-hmm. That's what they come for.
All right.
And if you don't have that, what success do you have? We struggle. We struggle to keep guests coming. They would rather go to the Zambezi or somewhere else, or at least to Mahangu, to Duvundu area. We struggle very, very, a lot, and the people do not understand this. They won't understand it. I started with kids. I started an environmental group called the McKenna Environmental Group. You can go to one of the people here who was the chairman. He's a taxi driver now and very friendly with us, does all our communications from Rundu and back. We don't go into Rundu anymore. He brings all the stuff to us. Faustinus Mashati, he can tell you. I started a youth environmental group. And guess what happened? I got them clothing, binoculars, written material, finance. I got people, my guests, to donate. They had something like $20,000 in the account. And what happens as soon as they start, and they came to me, eh? I didn't go to them. They came to me and they said they want to do this. And that was 20 years ago. And they said they want to do this. I started with them. And guess what happened? The community burnt down their clubhouse and told them they're becoming vigilantes. So that's how these people operate. You start something. So of course everybody's scared of doing something. And these are children. Those guys were 18 years old then, 16 and 18 years old. They came to me. And even so, the community turned on them. Their own people. Because they don't want to be controlled. They are used to doing things here. They are used to poaching. They are used to illegal fishing. And they've grown used to that because the authorities ignore it.
Yeah.
It's simple. Yeah. It's been that way for, Jesus, I've been here 30 years. Mm. It's been like that for 30 solid years. The authorities don't give a shit.
I'm not certain. I'm talking under correction. There was an awareness that was set.
There's always awareness.
Mm.
Both fisheries, MET, police, everybody have done awareness. I'm so tired of having people give that excuse to say, but they must be made aware. They are aware. They're very aware. Because you know, when you come across them on the river and they're netting illegally, what do?
They don't stop and have a chat to you. They run because they know they're doing things wrong. So this awareness, aware, make the people aware, is bullshit. It's been done. That's not an excuse anymore. They're all aware. They're all on TV and have got computers and cell phones. They know it's all wrong. They know. Community leaders, for what it's worth in this area, try and tell them. The schools try and tell them. I've been at schools. I even had a school group with a school teacher named Petrina at Lina Shashipako. She started an environmental group. Didn't go anywhere.
And that was the voice of Paxton speaking about illegal poaching between Divundu and Rundu. But for now, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Igel FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Igel FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
And now let's move over to economic indicators before we actually get into news beyond the borders of Namibia. Now, one US dollar today is equal to 16 Namibian dollars, 0.09 cents. One United Arab Emirate dirham is equal to 4 Namibian dollars, 0.38 cents. One Australian dollar is equal to 11 Namibian dollars, 0.34 cents. And one Swiss franc is equal to 20 Namibian dollars, 0.79 cents. One Botswana pula is equal to 1 Namibian dollar and 22 cents. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here. Take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly with news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Let's go over to news beyond the borders of Namibia. We're starting off regionally, moving over to continental news. Thereafter, some international news coming your way. Let's start off in South Africa, where the budget speech, is set to deliver positive outcomes. Let's take a listen.
Odongwana prepares. Analysts are upbeat about the country's economic growth trajectory as Finance Minister Enoch Odongwana prepares to deliver the 2026 national budget. Now, the positive sentiment is supported by the country's removal from the Financial Action Task Force's grey list. Four consecutive quarters of economic growth since September 2024, as well as a sovereign credit rating upgrade for the first time in 20 years. Now, all of this is in line with the government's own commitment towards its structural reform agenda, which is expected to sustain and stimulate growth in the medium to long-term future.
I mean, if we look at forecast agencies, the likes of the IMF and other agencies, even the National Treasury.
At my age, you start appreciating that, things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Okay, let's resume with that on Minister Enoch Godogwana of South Africa set to deliver the budget speech.
In the next 3, 4, 5 years, it's probably going to reach about 2%, right? And this is largely driven by some of the cyclical factors that we are seeing in the global economy, also in our economy, linked to, for example, interest rates, inflation, commodity prices, etc. But certainly also the structural transformation that we're seeing. But I think by its very nature, the challenge is that structural reforms and those things that have held us back in the past take time, you know, to implement. I think what we've seen with Operation Vulindlela in particular is that we have momentum.
Another welcome feature of this year's budget is an anticipated primary budget surplus. This essentially means that government revenue collections exceeded non-interest spending. This is, of course, in line with government's efforts to reduce and stabilize debt at around 78% of GDP this year. A lower debt burden means that a government is able to increase funding towards other priority areas such as education, policing, health, and infrastructure, among others.
Initially, they had proposed, the minister had proposed that they will have a shortfall of, I think, 20 billion. But in November, it was interesting to see that the commissioner was saying they're actually ahead by 18 billion. They were at a surplus by 18 billion. That shows the amount of work that they've been doing around any budget that they have from the government. In my view, they will continue to, I don't think they'll have new taxes or increase. I don't anticipate that they'll have high taxes from a corporate tax increase. But I do believe they'll continue to make sure that the methods that they're using to collect, they will strengthen that. They will make sure that they continue to employ skilled people. They'll make sure that the technology around, you know, getting data, analyzing data, they'll strengthen their opportunities there. Probably around employee taxes or individual taxes, even there, I do anticipate that they might have inflationary increases.
Now, last year's budget was clouded by uncertainty, characterized by multiple iterations of the budget, as members within the Government of National Unity could not reach an agreement over a proposed value-added tax increase. Now, the sentiment is much more positive this time around, following the reforms to the budget consultation process, while government has also managed to collect more in revenue than it previously expected.
The one thing that I think gives me a sense of policy or some level of alignment is on the issues that we've been discussing around economic reforms and so on. And I expect that there should be continuous alignment on what are the economic reforms. There will be these political party policy issues that we must accept will remain an issue going forward. But I do believe that there's more of an appetite from the GNU to listen to each other.
Now, the recent commodity price boom is expected to boost revenue through corporate income tax. However, where this money will be spent is still unclear. The answer to that question will come from the Finance Minister when he tables the 2026 budget in Parliament at 2 p.m. on the 25th of February. Naledi Mabitsela Ngobo for SABC News in Johannesburg.
Still in South Africa, SA's financial transformation targets are said to still be unmet.
Financial Sector Transformation Council CEO Nombambo Mlandu says the report highlights that some outcomes have been static, requiring a renewed push to drive progress beyond just compliance. Mlandu emphasized that ownership remains a cornerstone of meaningful transformation as it determines who holds control, voting rights, and economic benefit within financial institutions.
In terms of debt of this sector, we are seeing some improvements. However, there is still room for improvement. As you can see in relation to the target, we have, as a sector, been struggling to just meet that target. But it is something that is steadily making improvement that we are tracking very well.
E Commissioner Tsediso Matona warned that South Africa cannot afford to be distracted from the imperative of advancing equity and inclusion.
Even then, BEE was not designed as a silver bullet for all of South Africa's economic challenges. Because we end up saying BEE is not solving potholes. It was never meant to single-handedly on its own fix unemployment, eradicate poverty, or even guarantee GDP growth. However, when properly implemented and integrated into core business strategy and not treated as peripheral compliance, it contributes to building productive capacity, expanding participation, and strengthening the economic base.
He's coming a time of heightened scrutiny of BEE amid weak economic growth, high unemployment, and increased criticism that transformation policies have not delivered enough. Nosipho Khadebe, SABC News, Johannesburg.
Switching over to Zambia, the World Bank support to Zambia has stopped to $3 billion.
And I'm very happy to see that under your leadership, we were able to work with your colleague to develop that Zambia roadmap for basically maximizing the value addition for Zambia of the critical minerals that you process. And then the agriculture agenda is so critical here because this is still a sector that absorbs more than 50% of your labor resources. And if you imagine how many more jobs one can create, you can improve the productivities and make it much more efficient in the sector.
We went through the problems of an economy that had stagnated because of loss of investor confidence. And in all this, the World Bank has been a very strong partner. So whatever we've managed to achieve in the last 4.5 years, part of that is due to the team that you've had supporting us. So as you come here, we look forward to exchanging further views. There are a number of, I think the most overriding issue right now is economic stabilization having been more or less reasonably achieved. The next phase is how do we now get the economy on a consistent growth trajectory.
Zambia is said to be among the fastest growing school feeding implementers.
No barriers, no distance, down to the level of the learner. President Hakainde Hichilema stepped away from protocol to interact with pupils at Kabulonga Boys Secondary School, who lined up to welcome him. Phones went up, hands stretched forward. It was a moment that seemed to rekindle memories of his own school days. He stopped for selfies, leaned in for group photos, exchanged quick jokes with pupils who could barely contain their excitement. The president's eye did not miss the learners living with disabilities. The courtyard echoed with chants of, "Bali, we are the product of education." Inside the dining hall, the lighter mood continued. The president picked up a serving spoon, carefully dishing food onto waiting plates. For many learners, the president serving them a meal was a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
We thank the government of Zambia for answering our call, for making the feeding program accessible to all. To President Hakainde Hichilema, we proudly say,
thank you for lighting our educational path. We are the seeds of free education. We are the seeds of free education.
Later, during the official ceremony, the World Food Program highlighted the impact of the school feeding program across the country.
Allow me to begin by commending your visionary leadership and the unwavering commitment of your government to investing in the future of Zambia's children. By placing school feeding at the heart of the national development agenda, alongside the transformative free education policy, your government is sending a powerful message that no child should be left behind because of hunger.
Education Minister Douglas Yakalima noted that nearly 3 million children have returned to school under free education.
What it means, Mr. President, is that indeed the parents were not affording to pay for their kids. But also, this reminds you that the kids were thirsty for knowledge. This is why now they're trickling in those numbers.
The school's head teacher said 1,000 learners are fed daily at Kabulonga Boys Secondary School.
You are welcome to your school. We are happy you have given us your children. Therefore, this is your home away from home.
In a vote of thanks, pupil Elijah Jere described the visit as inspiring.
I want to assure you, Mr. President, that we are reciprocating your goodwill by working extra hard, and we will definitely deliver results that will put a smile on your face. We believe that in times to come, we'll occupy seats of authority and drive this nation, not only because of having the means to an education, but simply because a visionary leader in Mr. Hakainde Hichilema.
Let's cross over to Uganda now, where economists warn Uganda's budget reliance on debt threatens physical stability.
Parliament approved 80.4 trillion shillings budget for the 2025-2026 financial year after endorsing a supplementary allocation of over 8 trillion shillings in December 2025. Economists warn that while such top-ups may be politically or administratively necessary, they come at a cost, diverting resources from planned projects and delaying payments for critical government deliverables. The question now is how much these supplementary budgets are really costing the country.
Supplementary budget is an indiscipline, especially ours. Because at CSBAG, we've looked at the last 8 trillion supplementary budget, and I think we are able to find out almost 80% of expenses don't qualify to be supplementary budgets. Because supplementary budget is a system put in place to enable you address something that was not predictable at all, something that you can't avoid. But here we are using supplementary budget to spend on a day-to-day thing that we are supposed to have planned for. You can't put a pension into a supplementary budget. Neither can you put salaries into a supplementary budget. You can't put buying vehicles into a supplementary budget or organizing the meeting. That is an abuse of the system. And therefore, it distorts the budget process, but also, I mean, it reduces the appropriation of power of the parliament.
This trend is beginning to damage Uganda's reputation with international partners, including the IMF and other global lenders. International economists are now warning that the country needs to slow down.
The fact that you're announcing something in your budget, but then eventually for multiple years, by the time the investors look at your outturn, your fiscal deficit is way higher than what was mentioned in your budget. And of course, one of the concerns that the likes of the IMF or multilaterals have that I think the broader investment community shares today is the frequent issuance of supplementary budgets. I think the frequent issuance of supplementary budget doesn't only make the initial budget as a non-climatic event where the investors say we don't need to take these numbers seriously because there will be a budget, a supplementary budget that comes out, but it also crowds out the private sector. It also makes it difficult for monetary policy to be loose enough.
Even so, Uganda's public debt now stands at $32.2 billion, with debt-to-GDP ratio surpassing the 50% legal ceiling and projected to rise to 55.5% by June 2026. This, economists say, signals growing pressure on fiscal discipline. Rana Habwe, NTV Business.
Still in Uganda, a new ICT hub in Mbale is set to boost Uganda's digital jobs.
An ICT hub that we're going to be building in Mbale. So it'll be a three-story building. So the ground floor will have 50 computers for people to be trained in 7 different courses. The second floor will also have 50 computers for people to be trained in 7 different courses. And then the third floor, the top floor, will be an office hub where people can get jobs from perhaps international companies in UK, Eastern Europe, Asia, and India. And that's where we're going to get our sustainability of our projects in our ICT hub. We're looking for to help young people. So we're looking, obviously, to give skills to pupils at schools in Mbale. So we'll divide the time from 8 in the morning till 3 o'clock for the school children to be taught in IT skills. And then 3 o'clock until 9 o'clock every night and at weekends, it'll be adult learning.
In terms of ensuring that we create employment opportunities for our young people, we have set up spaces like this innovation hubs. We have set up this national ICT innovation hub here in Kampala, in the Central Business District, but we have also set up others at universities in regions across the country. We have one in the East, in Soroti University, so when we have one in Mbale, then they are complementing each other. Our goal is 150,000 jobs, but I believe that if we intensify the partnerships that we see today, we shall double that now.
Meanwhile, analysts warn Ethiopia debt dispute could trigger costly legal battles. Let's take a listen.
Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed told lawmakers earlier this month that one of his government's key economic achievements has been its negotiations over the past few years to ease the country's debt burden through restructuring.
Over the past 2 to 3 years, we have been engaged in an intensive struggle to restore Ethiopia's debt to a sustainable framework, and we have succeeded. We have reached an agreement under the G20 Common Framework with nearly all of our creditors, including our Eurobond holders. Debt reprofiling is now underway, and there is no doubt that Ethiopia will move out of a red rating into a mid-level or stronger rating category.
In early January, the government reached an agreement in principle with its private bondholders to restructure Ethiopia's $1 billion Eurobond debt. Reports show that the agreement included a 15% haircut in principal and extended maturity period. However, that deal is now stalled as the country's official creditors committee, chaired by China and France, rejected the agreement, citing comparability of treatment principle.
Ethiopia's private Eurobond lenders said that if the stalled restructuring deal cannot be implemented, they reserve all of their rights, including the right to pursue legal action. However, analysts say that litigation is counterproductive and not in the best interest of both parties.
Legal proceedings are very slow, very costly, and I don't think they serve the interest of both of the parties here. I think the official creditors will also focus on convincing these private creditors to agree to some kind of terms. There will be some kind of negotiations, but at the end of the day, legal litigations is gonna take a lot of time, and I don't think that's what they want.
The expert added that without a swift resolution to the Eurobond debt situation, Ethiopia, particularly its private sector, could face serious difficulties in accessing foreign financing.
Even if a creditor from outside agrees to a certain demand from, let's say, Ethiopian Airlines, for instance. Ethiopian Airlines is looking for like $12 billion from outside. They're building a big airport. They need finance from outside. But with this kind of credit rating looming over its head, it's going to be very much difficult. The interest rates will be very much higher if we are still in default, because those creditors view the country as credit risk. So the risks are high, so they need higher returns.
The Ministry of Finance said Ethiopia will reopen negotiations with its private investors in the hope of reaching a revised agreement. But for now, a deal with private Eurobond lenders remains elusive. Beka Atoma, CGTN, Addis Ababa.
Meanwhile, the European Union has rejected Donald Trump's tariff increases following the Supreme Court ruling.
A deal is a deal, the European Commission said in a statement on Sunday, demanding that the US stick to the terms of a trade deal reached last year. This came after the US Supreme Court struck down Donald Trump's global tariffs on Friday.
Actually not in a good mood.
And he responded with new 10% tariffs and then increased them to 15% across the board. The Commission, which negotiates trade policy on behalf of 27 EU member states, said Washington must provide full clarity on the steps it intends to take. Last year's EU-US trade deal set a 15% US tariff rate for most EU goods, apart from those covered by other sectoral tariffs such as on steel. It also allowed zero tariffs on some products such as aircraft and spare parts, while the EU agreed to remove import duties on many US goods. But it is not clear whether Trump's new 15% tariffs supersede the deal. If they do, the EU's zero tariff exemptions could disappear, and the comparative advantage the EU had with a 15% tariff would appear to have disappeared, as even countries without a deal face the same rate. As uncertainty looms, gold prices climbed to a three-week high on Monday, and Wall Street futures and the US dollar slid.
Meanwhile, Donald Trump says that nations that play games, quote-unquote, will face higher tariffs.
U.S. President Donald Trump on Monday warned countries against backing away from recently negotiated trade deals with the U.S. This follows the Supreme Court decision Friday to strike down his emergency tariffs. Trump said he would hit them with much higher duties under different trade laws. On social media, he said, quote, "Any country that wants to play games with the ridiculous Supreme Court decision, especially those that have ripped off the USA for years and even decades, will be met with a much higher tariff and worse than that which they just recently agreed to. Buyer beware." Trump said he also may impose license fees on trading partners as uncertainty over his next tariff moves gripped the global economy and sent stocks lower. A spokesperson for the U.S. Trade Representative's office did not immediately respond to a request for further comment on Trump's plans. In Brussels, the European Parliament decided on Monday to postpone a vote on the European Union's trade deal with the U.S. after Trump imposed a new temporary import duty of 15% on imports from all countries.
They don't know what would be the terms of the deal now.
Nicolas Frederick Poitiers, a research fellow at the Bruegel think tank, says there is a high level of uncertainty in Europe over how this will play out.
It is unclear what will be the rules under this new tariff, so this has to be calculated good by good. It is not unlikely that there will be goods where the tariff rate will be somewhat higher than under the agreement of last year. At the same time, it is not clear if these tariffs will stand for very long anyway. So right now, there's a lot of uncertainty over this.
Trump's new duty is set to take effect early Tuesday morning. At that same moment, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency said it would stop collecting the duties ruled illegal by the Supreme Court's decision.
Meanwhile, bomb cyclone slams 40 million Americans like a hurricane.
A powerful and intensifying bomb cyclone slamming the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic. More than 40 million people are under blizzard warnings across 11 states, and many of them have declared states of emergency. Some of the worst of it is hitting as I speak. And look at the map. Widespread blizzard conditions are expected across much of the region, including Boston, Providence, Hartford, Connecticut, and the New York City metro area. We're talking snowfall at 2 to 3 inches per hour through 10 a.m. And it's already knocked out power to nearly 400,000 customers in the region. The snow, along with winds gusting more than 70 miles per hour. And believe me, we felt it on our way here. It's causing some whiteout conditions out there. More than a foot has already fallen in parts of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, and Delaware. And it's not stopping. Look at that. Officials are pleading with people, please stay inside and off the roads.
New York City has not faced a storm of this scale in the last decade. We are asking New Yorkers to avoid all non-essential travel. Please, for your safety, stay home, stay inside, and stay off the roads.
It's dangerous. This is a very heavy, wet snow. There are incredibly high winds up to 60 miles per hour. That means that we could see branches and trees falling into the highway, drifts, and whiteout conditions.
You heard it there, the storm paralyzing travel across the regions, down trees and impassable roads, a plow truck overturning on Long Island, more than 5,000 flights scheduled for today canceled. By the time this finally ends, the hardest hit areas could get nearly 2 feet of snow. We have full team coverage of this potentially historic storm. CNN's Brian Todd is out in the storm zone in Philadelphia this morning. We've also got Derek Van Dam, who is in our weather center. Let's start with Brian because he's got the pictures. For the record, we all walked to work a block today. The company put us up so that we could get here to tell the story. What are you seeing out there?
Well, Sarah, authorities here in Philadelphia have been scrambling overnight and this morning to stay ahead of this storm. And a really good illustration of it is what happened right behind me just minutes ago. This was a large tree that was completely down and across Martin Luther King Boulevard here in Philadelphia an hour ago when I was on live. Now, since that time, a large front end loader came by and just cleared everything. He just picked up the entire tree and shoved it over. You've got a plow. Now clearing a little bit more of it. I just stumbled on the snowdrift here a little bit. He's clearing a little bit more of it there to try to, you know, just get more room for cars to come. But what they really want is for people to stay off the roads.
And let's get over to CNN's Derek Van Dam with much more on this. Derek, what are you watching right now?
Kate, we're already approaching 2 feet of snow in Freehold, New Jersey. Wind gusts exceeding 70 miles per hour across the coastal areas of New Jersey through the coastal regions of Maine. This storm acting like a hurricane. Let me show you a live picture. This is the Statue of Liberty, familiar looking shot, right? Looking down at the beautiful Statue of Liberty, but the camera, it's been shaking back and forth. There's been these snow squalls that have moved in. And when I say that this storm's been acting like a hurricane, I mean it. It's down to 972 millibars. That's equivalent to a typical Category 2 hurricane. So what is it doing? Yes, it's producing snowfall, but it's also producing a lot of wind. That's why we have blizzard warnings in place, because that whips around the wind. It reduces the visibility at a moment's notice. And this is a future satellite. Look at that, almost an eye-like feature. That's what I'm saying when I talk about this being more of a snow cane. versus a nor'easter. Of course, two different types of features there, but this is interesting. Look at these totals. We're approaching 2 feet, but even into Long Island, we're almost at 20 inches of snow, and that's where we're seeing some of the heaviest snow bands moving through right now. So what we'll see through the course of the morning is snow coming to an end in around the national, into Washington, D.C. But along...
You know, Ukraine marks 4 years since Russia's full-scale invasion.
Ukraine entering its fifth year of war, and already today there has been a minute's silence. People get an alert on their phone here in Ukraine, and the country tries, if it can, to take that minute, that moment, to just remember those that have died. Lots of dignitaries arriving here in the capital for commemorations that are taking place across the day. Prime ministers, presidents from across Europe in particular are here to stand with President Zelensky and all of Ukraine. But we did also see continuing Russian airstrikes across the country. In the city of Zaporizhia, we know that 5 people, including a child, were injured. Several big multi-story buildings were damaged. They're used to this in Zaporizhia. There are drone strikes there all of the time. But just a reminder that this war does continue despite this very solemn day for people here in Ukraine. We had some pictures just to show you just of Kyiv this morning. Lots of the city is in lockdown. Really difficult for us to move around the city this morning because of all the dignitaries that are here and the things that are taking place. But people are also out as well, visiting some of the memorial sites, paying their respects as well. But you can see this is just a street scene on a very cold day again here in Kyiv, although it is warmer than it has been, and that is a relief for many. Well, the street's a little bit difficult to get around to because that snow turning to slush, as you can see. But just people moving around the city in Kyiv this morning. A very, very poignant moment today as well in Bucha, where we saw people visiting the local cemetery. You may remember that name, Bucha. There were victims in the cemetery of the Russian occupation where people are buried there. That's where a massacre took place. And throughout the day, we know that President Zelensky and others are going to be here, as I mentioned. Let's have a listen to President Zelensky, who addressed the nation this morning.
Я дуже хочу одного дня прийти сюди.
And with that, we have officially come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkona Nadengi program brought to you by Matthias Sangara. And after the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 16:30, the business economic segment comes your way from 1800 hours with David Chombe. From Indafa, happy Juju. That's goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow. Same time, same place, same radio frequency, same website, and same radio app. That is Eagle FM Namibia from 1300 hours to 14:30 for On the Radar News Analysis. Goodbye.